On 88.1, I'm Tom Hall. It's time now for another installment in our monthly series, Living Questions, in which we examine the role of religion in the public sphere. We're producing this series in partnership with the Institute for Christian and Jewish Studies. As we enter this Christmas week, I've invited three religious leaders to discuss, among other things, a headline in the New York Daily News that caught my attention and the attention of a lot of other folks as well. It appeared earlier this month, the day after a husband and wife in San Bernardino, California, murdered 14 people at a holiday party. In the four corners of the tabloid newspaper, Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, Rand Paul, and Paul Ryan are all quoted as saying that their prayers are with the victims of the massacre. In the middle of the page, in large block letters, the headline screams, "God isn't fixing this." The subheadline appears to make the case for stricter gun control measures. It says, "As latest batch of innocent Americans are left lying in pools of blood, cowards who could truly end gun scourge continue to hide behind meaningless platitudes." The Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life reported earlier this year that more than 16% of Americans identify as unaffiliated with any particular faith. That's more than double the number who say they were unaffiliated as children. With fewer Americans embracing religious faith, has prayer in the nomenclature of the New York Daily News been relegated to, quote, meaningless platitudes? On the same day the Daily News published its headline, the New York Post published a headline that said simply, "Muslim killers." Muslims have reported a sharp increase in incidents of anti-Islamic behavior since the attacks in Paris and San Bernardino. So if the polls are correct, religion plays less of a role it once did in the lives of Americans, but the case can be made that religion is playing more of a role in bigotry and intolerance in our society. Dr. Christopher Layton joins me in the studio. He's the executive director of the Institute for Christian and Jewish Studies. He's also an ordained Presbyterian minister. Safir Rab II is here as well. He's an imam and the CEO of Interculture, a consulting firm that advises public and private sector clients on matters of cultural competency and sensitivity. We're also joined by Rabbi Stephen Schwartz, who is the senior rabbi at Bethel Congregation in Pikesville and a board member of the ICJS. Gentlemen, welcome to you all. Thank you for coming in.
Great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So, Safir Rab, let me start with you, and I want to pass this around the table. What do you make of this headline, "God isn't fixing this"?
God didn't start it. I think that the headline suggests, in a very sly way, that the Republicans that are running for president are attributing the fix to religion, and it is directly implying that religion is not the right answer. And I think it's really a political partisan expression more than it is a criticism of religion. But I think that for sure, prayer, when you get into the article, and the prayer is a symbol, prayer is an idea, is wrongly interpreted from the start. And if that is corrected, and the role of religious leaders toward that correction is appropriated correctly, then I believe the headline would have absolutely no basis.
Mm-hmm. Rabbi Schwartz, this, of course, is an age-old question, and when your congregants come to you with a question like this, or, you know, the question of if God is loving and God is good, how could God have allowed the Holocaust to happen? I mean, this is a question that the rabbis and scholars have been wrestling with for centuries. What do you tell them when they present this headline to you, "God isn't fixing this"? Why not?
Why don't you just give me a hard question, Tom? We go on.
We start with the easy ones, yeah. Right.
I mean, the headline to me, it actually speaks to an old Jewish idea, which is essentially say your prayers, but then go out and do your work. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't wait around for God to take care of it. That's a responsibility that God has given us with the tools, the intellect, the wisdom, all of the things that we can use to make the world the kind of world that God would want it to be. The question is, are we doing it or not? And unfortunately, all too often, we fail in that task.
And Chris Layton, I guess a lot of this has to do with different traditions and the teachings about what our personal relationship with God is. Massacres like this happen, the president just this year started saying, well, look, every time I mention gun control after one of these mass slayings, I'm told that I'm politicizing the issue. And he said finally this year, we should politicize this. This is a political issue. So here we have political leaders. Are they just spewing platitudes?
Well, in the first place, I want to amplify a point that Steve was making. The headline that said God isn't fixing this, in many respects, although it scandalizes many popular ears, the reality is this tradition of lamentation, this tradition of calling God to account, is part and parcel of many of the Psalms that have been around for 3,000 years. So that calling God to wake up, to be involved, to get active, to cajoling God to start acting like God, which in many respects strikes us as outrageous, is part of the tradition suggesting that one can bring one's entire self, including one's rage, to bear on the divine. That God is, if you will, big enough to handle whatever emotions and reactions we have to toss it. But one doesn't stop in that outrage. In a sense, one is called upon through prayer to do what is empirically seen as impossible. Namely, to go back into the past and repair it. Death and loss leaves an open wound, and it is the business of our religious traditions to make the leap into the past, come into grips with the loss in all of its magnitude, and stitching up that open sore so that one does not get caught in anger, resentment, grievances, that it seems to me is being disseminated throughout our culture right now. And so I think, indeed, our prayers need to be politicized so that we do not submit ourselves to a culture of fear.
Mm-hmm. Sophia Robb, when you're teaching and when your students are wrestling with these issues, what do you say about the role of prayer in Islam? What does one accomplish with prayer, or is that even a bad way of framing it in terms of accomplishment or not?
Well, for sure, prayer is in itself an accomplishment, and it accomplishes many things. One of the great accomplishments of prayer is balance. It takes the psyche, and through regular attribution, regular recognition of the creator, of the source of life, the source of meaning, the source of purpose that is bigger than any of our current woes, our current circumstances, our current realities. The idea of reinforcing that awareness is achieved through prayer, is accomplished through prayer. And I'd like to echo the one point that Steve made that yes, you know, in Islam, there's an encouragement that prayer and good works have to complement one another in order to express faith.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's I believe that's the greatest accomplishment of prayer.
Mm-hmm. And Steve Schwartz, you know, I personally believe, at least, that, you know, Dr. Carson, Senator Cruz, President Obama, Secretary of State Clinton are genuine and authentic when they say they pray, and when they pray fervently, and when their thoughts and prayers are with the victims of this disaster or that disaster. There's prayer in the liturgy. You have prayer in the shul and community, you know, on Friday nights and Saturday mornings. But then there's individual prayer. What is the Jewish teaching about this relationship with God and the nature of praying in the Jewish faith?
Commonly, Judaism understands prayer as being something that is more internally directed as opposed to externally directed. In other words, if we're saying the words or reaching out to God with a hope or an expectation, where do the words go? Where do our thoughts go? In the end, I'm not sure we really know, but through that exercise, we can maybe learn more about ourselves, who we want to be, and how we want to interact with the world. And through that process, then, You know, there you can find a sense of peace, you can find a sense of healing, and there, I think prayer can be transformative, but it works more internally than externally.
Rabbi Stephen Schwartz is a senior rabbi at Beth-El Congregation. Safir Rab II is here. He's an imam and the CEO of Interculture. Dr. Christopher Layton joins us as well. He's the executive director of the Institute for Christian and Jewish Studies and an ordained Presbyterian minister. This is Living Questions on Maryland Morning 88.1. I'm Tom Hall. Chris Layton, when incidents like Paris, like San Bernardino, like Newtown, like Charleston, when these occur, the question comes up about what the role of organized religion is in terms of its responsibility for these actors. Is the Catholic Church responsible for Mr. Deere, who goes into a Planned Parenthood site in Colorado Springs, or is the Black Church responsible for violence in Black neighborhoods around the country? Is, you know, are Muslims responsible for Muslims acting in the name of Islam, creating acts of violence? How should we be framing those questions? Where does the responsibility for these organized religions lie?
Well, in one sense, the responsibility resides in the individual who commits the acts, and that individual needs to be held accountable. But it seems to me, at least my tradition wants to make another move as well. It wants to argue that in some sense we are responsible for each other, and that the act of an individual reflects a larger problem within the culture and the society, the public at large. And it is the responsibility of each of our traditions, each of our communities, to make sure that we do not allow toxic understandings to be disseminated, to be spread around. And what I mean by that is it's so easy in the wake of a tragedy, a horror of the sorts that we've been treated to of late, to try to divide the world up into they're the good guys and they're the bad guys. And we better arm ourselves to defend ourselves from the bad guys. Well, in my tradition, there's a sense of saying, you know what, that divide between so-called good guys and bad guys is an artificial and mistaken notion. We belong to each other. And therefore, it is essential for us to recognize and to see our face even in the face of those that we want to brand as criminals. Therefore, we must take responsibility for finding whatever it is in our traditions that can be used and abused in the service of hate and disarm it.
Safir Rab, preliminary data reported in the New York Times just yesterday for 2015 found 71 reported cases of vandalism, harassment, and threats, with 29 of those occurring since the assaults in France against mosques and Islam in general, Muslims in particular, around the United States. When you talk to your students and talk about this notion of assimilation into American society, assimilation and creating an atmosphere of respect and tolerance, what are you advising them? What are you saying? Because they're clearly worried, and they clearly have a reason to be worried.
Well, first, I don't talk about assimilation into American society. I live it. I express it. I am the result of it. Meaning, when we look at the origin of Islam in America, we really see an Islamic expression rooted in social justice and human rights. We don't see something that is given to wanting to hurt people that is antithetical to what American Islam is and what it's always been. And so there's no lift to persuade the identity into accepting America. It built America. It was kidnapped from Africa and placed in servitude in America. That is the expression of our history, and that is the fact. To have the media dominate the airwaves with this expression of imported Islam that wants to hurt people, for any that's a foreign concept. It's a concept that doesn't fly well in the inner city, where people across faiths. And by the way, never before have we seen so many faiths coming together to help the world in its troubles and the history of the world But I'll say that in the inner city, Muslims are known as people to repair social problems, not people who want to hurt folks. So when disproportionate attention is given to wackos that spring up in the face of things that happen in France, I think that it would serve America better to give more attention to the way people are cooperating to help social concerns and not the destructive ones.
Mm-hmm. Steve Schwartz, it strikes me as a little interesting or ironic, at least, that as religious intolerance seems to have been on the increase, a steady increase, and I think, you know, a candidate like Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, who've also suggested very similar things to what Mr. Trump has suggested in terms of barring Muslims entry into the country. It's interesting that that's a manifestation of a rise in religious intolerance at the same time that the number of people who are identifying as religious is going down. Does that strike you as weird as it strikes me?
I think there's an irony there. But in some ways, to me, whether it's about religion, whether it's about racism, I mean, one of the things I keep going back to is how powerful rhetoric is and how dangerous rhetoric can be. And I think we're coming to terms with that in a new way. You know, that may be one of the reasons why religion has become less popular, because there's been a lot of anti-religious rhetoric over the last decade or so. So maybe folks who are on the fence would say, I'm going to step out of my church. I'm not going to go to my mosque. I don't want to go to my synagogue. There's no real reason. I don't get anything from it. Plus, there could be trouble there anyway, so I'm just going to stay out of the game at this point. But in terms of remarks that Trump has made, the power of rhetoric, what it can bring in terms of danger into culture, into society, it's scary. It's a scary time. Jewish community just spent some time reflecting and recollecting about the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin 20 years ago now, and the bed that was made so that something like that could happen largely came out of a religious community with dangerous rhetoric.
Chris Layton, one of the distinctions that the president and other people have made about the so-called radical jihadists who are committing these acts, be they here in America or elsewhere, is that they have a complete willingness to die, that they think that death is actually a step up and it's a better deal than being alive. Is there any distinction in that interpretation of the Quran between that and the Christian perspective on death and the afterlife?
Well, I think both of our traditions want to argue that death does not have the last word, and they want to encourage and inspire a level of courage and fortitude to stick up for and stand strong in the face of what is seen as injustice and oppression. Martyrdom, of course, can be twisted and turned in directions that make it an enormously dangerous category. And so, in large measure, what I would want to say to that segment of the population that's opted out of religion altogether is that they are depriving themselves of an opportunity to wrestle with the tradition and to retrieve and recover the voices of their ancestors, with whom they can argue and perhaps even learn something.
Well, we have learned a good bit this morning, and I appreciate all three of you coming in, and thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Safiya Rabb II is an imam and the CEO of Interculture, a consulting firm here in Baltimore. Rabbi Stephen Schwartz is the senior rabbi at Beth El Congregation in Pikesville and a member of the board of the Institute for Christian and Jewish Studies. Christopher Layton is the executive director of the ICJS and an ordained Presbyterian minister. This has been another discussion in our series, Living Questions, in which we explore all aspects of the role of religion in the public sphere. Come to our website, wipr.org/livingquestions, for more. I'm Tom Hall. We're delighted that you've joined us this morning from Maryland Morning. Lots more coming up after a break for the news. Theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews the new show at Baltimore's Everyman Theater. First, here's Nathan.